Coast 1079. Cool, but addictive. It's all about the music.
That's a great, great song, that, isn't it? That's Dinah Ross and Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Ain't No Mountain Low Enough. Ain't No. Yeah. And on the line, all the way from, I think it's come up on my phone as Sonny Macclesfield, but I don't believe for an iota he's over there. The one and only Russell Watson. Hi, Russell.
It's not sunny.
It's not sunny, is it?
It's not sunny. It's cloudy, John, and it's raining.
So we're in England.
We are, and ain't no mountain high enough.
Have you ever done that song?
I haven't, no, but it's funny you should mention Ain't No Mountain High Enough, because my new hit single, which is now currently sitting at number 16 in the United States of America, is called Sometimes Love Just Ain't Enough.
I know.
So
and
there's a lot of ain't going on today.
And we're going to we're going to end this interview with that ain't song.
Are you?
Because it's one sometimes of my... Do you know what? That is one of my all-time favourites. No, that's one of my all-time favourites. When Don Henley and Patti Smyth did it, I used to play that on the Peace Flower, and it was just one of those songs. And then when Steve said to me, Russell's bringing this song out, and I went, get out of here. And he said, no, I'll send you a copy. And
yeah, it's a proper pop song.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
As I was saying before to you, you know, we speculatively released the record out in the States, threw it into the pop charts, to see what had happened. And first week, we were hoping we might sort of touch the top 100, because it's a really competitive chart, the United States pop chart.
Not half.
We were hoping we were going to, like, you know, maybe clip the top 100 and get a few, you know, quite a nice bit of airplay before we go over there and start the promo. Mm. But the record went in at 48. Then a few days later, it was at 42. Week later, it had gone up another few places, and it was mid-30s. And slowly, slowly, over the last 6 weeks, we've built up the chart, and we're now currently sitting in the midweek at number 16.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? It's unbelievable. Well, it's not unbelievable.
It's completely and utterly unprecedented, the success that we're having in the States at the moment with that single. And, might I add as well, nobody yet knows that's in classical music. They're judging the record purely on the fact that it is a complete out-and-out pop tune.
Oh, you're winding me up now. Come on.
I'm not. They don't know, honestly. There's obviously the, you know, I went out there, you know, in the early stages of my career, I went out there and I was singing the classical repertoire.
Yeah, yeah.
But the country's got like 300-odd million people in it, and there's only like a small percentage of them actually know who I am. So this is being played all over the States right now, and some of the biggest radio stations in America are listening to my music,
yeah,
you know, blitzing out the radio.
Right.
And they're judging me as a pop singer. They don't know that I sing classical repertoire.
So when you...
I get over there and they come to one of the concerts and I'm singing Ness and Dorma thinking, hey, up a minute.
They've been looking at the programme thinking, hang on, where's this fella come from?
Who's Birdie?
Oh my God, Russ! I tell you,
who's this Petrini book? I thought it was this sort down the bottom of our road. Oh dear!
I said to Steve, you know, I think I passed Cross when I was down the road at City, and then we passed again when I was working at Smith's in Warrington. And I said, he's got to come up to the Southport to come up to the studio and do a live set with us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
you know,
just let us know when.
You know, because your studio and your garage is better than what I'm working in my station.
You heard about my garage?
Hey, Wimslow FM.
Keeping it real under pressure.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, I mean, it's been phenomenal, and the whole process of, you know, how we made the new album. I've got a new group of people that I'm working with now, the record labels.
Yeah.
You know, totally committed to building my career internationally. And that's something that, you know, to be fair, like over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I've just felt like that, you know, with the label that I was with, I wasn't getting that the commitment that I wanted from them.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't pushing me internationally. We've done really well in the UK. But I wanted to take the success that we've had here and transpose it, you know, transport it overseas, you know, into Europe and then, you know, Asia and the United States market.
Mm.
And it just wasn't, you know, they just weren't doing it with me, so...
No, I mean, I'm really itching Russ, I'm really itching to get my hands on the new album because I haven't got it, right? And I know the tracks off the album because I went, he's doing Richard Marx Now and Forever. Hang on a minute, he's doing If I Loved You from Carousel. Hang on a minute, he's doing Do You Hear What I Hear from the Christmas. Hang on, he's doing Mario Lanza. Oh, hang on, he's having a laugh here. Now he's
It's a proper eclectic mix of
well, I tell you what, the guy who's done the album with you, Bob Rose, you couldn't get much better, could you? Because he was with Roy Orbison and Traveling Wilburys.
He's done his work with everyone. Yeah. I mean, the stories that he's got working with him was a great experience. But he's worked with everyone from Orbison to Bowie. He's worked with the guys from the Beatles, Julian Lennon. The list is literally endless, and he's an old school producer as well. So the way we made the record was completely different from how I've made records before.
Right.
So you know everything these days it's all digital.
Yeah.
Whereas I got in, the first thing Bob said to me was like, you know, we're going to make this record is going to be made. We're making it analog. It's all been recorded on 2-inch tape.
Wow.
Everything that we recorded was in the studio. Live with the band or the orchestra, and we recorded it. We made the record. We were out there for a couple of months. We made the record in Rome, in Ennio Morricone's studio.
It's easy for you to say, isn't it?
It was unbelievable. The orchestra we used was Ennio, the orchestra that Morricone uses for all his big movies.
Yes.
Just honestly, what an amazing group of musicians. But then the pop stuff. Obviously, Bob's mates with, people, the guys from Oasis, his pals with, the drummer from Radiohead.
He's
best mates with Nigel Harrison from Blondie, the bass player.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they all turned up to the session. They played on the record, and the sound is just off the scale. The musicians, total world class. So when I got in there with them, and they're all... They've all got their own characters and their own little vibe going on, but the vibe and the track that we had together was just brilliant. It was a real, the spirit in which this record has been made has been tremendous.
And was everybody trying to outdo everybody else with a different story? Well, I've done this because I'd love you. Does Bob know?
No, it wasn't like that. It was the total opposite, because these guys have done everything.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like, again, from my perspective, I've met a lot of people in my career, in my life. I've sung for the Pope, I've sung and had dinner with the Emperor of Japan, I've sung for, presidents of, three presidents of the United States.
Don't forget,
Her Majesty. I've done some amazing things. The one thing that you notice and you realise about people who are super, super wealthy or super powerful is they don't brag about it.
No.
It's usually the ones that are kind of on the periphery that want everybody to think that they're great, but aren't really that great. They're constantly going on about, I've got this, I've got that, I've got this much, I've got that much. It's like, yeah, whatever. But the ones like these guys who have been there, done it all, they're just ultra, ultra cool. And the vibe was brilliant, and it was like the Mutual Admiration Society when we were
brilliant.
Working together.
Is this like the pinnacle that you've been looking for, Russ?
I think I would say with the way that the pop repertoire's come out,
yes,
I've never ever achieved anything at this level with regards to the pop stuff. Never.
No.
And the classical stuff, because of the way that Bob recorded it and the way the studio was set up and we were in with the musicians and the analog sound as well, there's a real authenticity to it that I'm not knocking any of my previous records. I mean, for me, my first two records, The Voice and Encore, were incredibly special. It was new and it was fresh and I was really excited. And I'm proud of those records, even though technically, everything isn't perfect and it's not. It was my first record and we're still learning them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still proud of it. But
absolutely.
As a recording, performance value, this is the one.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, do you still... I mean, I was looking back at The Voice, that's 15 years old, that now, Russ.
It is.
you know. And then I dug out, when Steve said this was going, I dug out my musical version of the War of the Worlds when you were the parson.
Oh, crikey. I mean, that.
You know, and that is...
I've got a good story about that.
Go on, then.
So, Jeff Wayne is kind of like... He's a hero of mine.
Yes, yeah.
So when I found out that I was doing the War of the Worlds, first of all, I was like, gobsmacked. You know what I mean? Jeff Wayne.
Yes.
So I was well pleased about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I rolled up and we start rehearsals and he likes what I'm doing and we're all geared up to start the show. But at the time, I'd started with these really, really, I had these really bad headaches. It was around 2005 and I wasn't feeling great.
Yeah.
I'd gone for a run the night before we were due to do the first concert. I think it was at Wembley. We were doing the first one, the arena. And I was running around Hyde Park, and I tripped, and I tore my Achilles, the back of my ankle, and it flared up like a balloon.
Go away.
So the night after, we're going to do the... it was the day before the show. And I go, and Jeff's like, you're limping. I said, yeah, I know, I tripped in Hyde Park, and I've done something. Anyway, they had it looked at, and it was the Achilles. So Jeff's saying, don't do the show, Russell, you know, just don't do the show. You got to rest yourself. We'll put the dep in, and you'll get yourself better, and then we'll put you in for this later on. I went, no, I need to do, I'm doing the show.
Yeah.
I'll limp. I said, it'll actually be good, because it'll look like... You know, because the parson's this tortured soul. He's been roaming around the wilderness for weeks. So I go on the stage. I've got a banging headache because I didn't realise at the time I had a bloody big tumour growing in my head as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got this massive headache. I'm holding my head. I'm dragging my leg behind me as well because my Achilles is swollen up and I can't walk properly. And I start singing the parson's Nathaniel's piece. And the next day in the Telegraph, they did this review of the concert. And it said, Russell's performance of Parson Nathaniel's song was absolutely fantastic, although I'm not so sure about the unconvincing limp. I couldn't walk! That was the only thing that was real!
Blimey, good job you didn't tell him about the headache, mate.
I know.
Jeez, I wasn't even going to touch on that, but that took another 5 years to materialise, really, didn't it?
Oh, man, that was horrible.
Yes.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
And I was diagnosed with that in 2006. I was out in LA making a record, and I'd had the headaches for a while, and it got worse and worse and worse. I remember I was having to wear sunglasses a lot because my head was banging so much. And someone had wrote about, it was a newspaper I won't mention, had wrote about me that, you know, I turned up to an interview and I had sunglasses on and I thought I was, you know, like the main man and all the rest of it. And then 6 months later it's in the newspapers that I had me, you know, sunglasses on for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was a really tough time.
I know.
But it was a time that, you know, thankfully I've managed to...
Oh, absolutely, mate. Hey, listen, the line's been drawn underneath. But I am gonna press you for one other little thing, pal.
Yeah.
There we go. Is it a yes or is it a no? Because before it was a maybe. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it a yes? Is it a no? Before it was a maybe. Go on.
Slash asked you to be the lead singer of the Velvet Revolver.
Oh, good Lord. That's true.
He did.
He did. That's a true story.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it may have been flippantly. But he was actually a fan of my music.
He is.
He had the first two records.
That's right, yeah.
And it was strange because I was interviewing him because I was doing this programme for ITV, which was like, it was called Russell Rocks. And basically it was, you know, me discussing with these superstar rock singers about... What the similarities between classical music and rock music, or indeed, if there was any. And I interviewed Slash from Guns N' Roses, I interviewed the lead singer at Kiss.
Yes.
I interviewed Meatloaf. I ended up singing, doing a duet with Meatloaf at the end of the show.
I know, what a great... I remember that.
that was mad, because I was a massive fan of Meatloaf when I was a kid. So there I was singing with him. The guy's an absolute lunatic, by the way, but it was a it was an amazing experience. But I met Slash in a bar on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. I'm trying to remember the name of the place. It was like, it's a really famous hang for the rock stars.
Okay.
And I come in, it was like 10 o'clock in the morning, and Slash is sat at the bar on his own. There's no one else in the place. He's sat on a bar stool. He had a fag hanging out of the corner of his mouth and a Guinness in the other hand. It was like 10 o'clock. He was like, should I call you Mr. Slash or just Slash? He went,
blimey.
You can call me what you want, man. I said, let me tell you, Russell, you got one of the most amazing voices I ever heard. And I went, wow, well, thank you very much, Mr. Slash. And we kind of, like, I did the interview with him, was asking him about the band and all the rest of it. And then at the end he says, we're doing, like, you know, the auditions for the band. He says, you should come along and show them how it's done, Russell. You should come along and sing for us.
Brilliant. Like, fabulous.
I'm a bit busy at the moment, Mr. Slash, but thanks for the offer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, pal, I know you're very busy as well, and I think you've got another line to go through to, but it's been a pleasure, mate, honestly. I've been dying for this interview to happen, and I can't wait for you to come up to Southport, and we'll have a jar together and a good laugh.
Fantastic. Sounds good to me, that
job. Tell you what, Russell, I'm so made up. It's happening for you in America. Get over there, knock them dead with all this new stuff on the album. I'm looking forward to the album. I know Steve's going to get me a copy. It's going to be the album of the week. Your single is the single of the week on my station here. Sometimes Love Just Ain't Enough, and that's what we're going to go out with.
Bless you. Thanks a lot, mate. Much appreciated. Thanks for your support, John.
And you, take care, Russell. Bye bye now.
All right, cheers, Bob. Bye-bye.
There we go. The one and only Russell Watson. What a great, great. Fantastic guy that man is. And this is the single. Single of the week here at Coast, and the current song from Russell Watson, and at number 16 in America, he's just told us. Sometimes Love Just Ain't Enough, originally done by Don Henley and Patti Smythe many, many years ago. It gets released on the 28th of October. You can also find it on his new album called True Stories, which is out in November.
Coast 1079, for your ears only.